Most High, I come to you giving you thanks and praise for keeping me in sound body and mind. I ask you to forgive me for all my indiscretions, all that I have done and all that I will do. I ask you to open me up, use me as your vessel, let my voice be yours. Speak your mission through me, allow the listeners to open up and receive it the way you intended. No holds barred. Use me. I look at the news and I watch other people's nations formed over.
Do women, powerful women, who ascribe to live the power, the Salem witch power, if you would, the religious freedom, the sexual independence that you want as a human being who happens to be in the form of a woman, do you have to be criminally deviant in a sense to do that? But you understand what I'm saying. Do you have to sort of shoot outside the norm? And criminality is simply exactly what you said about an hour ago. Is simply figuring out a way to get to the things that you want. So criminality, it is not aberrant behavior. It is just, here's this box of normality. And I'm going to step outside it. We don't really know that objectively if that is criminal behavior. It is only criminal because it steps outside this norm that we've all created and accepted.
And that's only, so by acknowledging that, it's actually presupposing that I also believe that. Because I don't know what norm is. I don't know what you deem normal.
You know why? Because I'm a criminal!
What sort of work do you do now as, is it opthrive.com?
Operation Thrive is the name of the company.
But the website, www.opthrive.
O-P-T-H-R-I-V.
So what do you do after 30-odd years of living this reality and coming to terms with it? And at this point, owning the processes to shape your thinking, and then trying to get others to see and find value in replicating those things for themselves. Who do you work with? What do you do?
So some of the obvious ones that I work with would be athletes, military, in helping them not only, again, have that perceptual agility. So how do you reframe your thinking in deliberate ways in the moment? How to activate your flow state, or I wouldn't truly call it a flow state, but activate like your zone. Let's say a lot of athletes, you know, they go into a performance, they know and they can recall performances when they've done really well. And I'll ask them like, what were you feeling when you were in that situation? Like, what was going on with your body? What was your headspace like? Were you thinking? Were you just not thinking at all? Were you angry? Were you excited? Were you happy? Were you just void of emotion? Like, what was going on in that moment? And they'll name a few components to it that helps them define what that is. And then we'll ask them, okay, so you know that. Do you know when you aren't in your zone? You're not in your flow? And they're like, yeah, I'm either, you know, way far on one side of the spectrum, way far on the other side of the spectrum. I know what that looks like. Okay, great. Do you ever actually prime yourself, like ignite that zone state prior to going into the performance? And the vast majority will say, well, no. No, I don't think about something that puts me there prior to playing. I actually just like kind of like cross my fingers. If it happens, it happens. But a lot of them don't do it deliberately. So we train them how to get there. And it's not just about thinking your way. It's about how to like manage your physiology, regulate your energy, maximize your ability to perform and shift your attention where needed in any way possible. So you might do it by igniting a certain emotion. You might do it by igniting a certain thought. You might do it by breathing a certain way. And it will significantly enhance your performance in a very short amount of time.
So those are the big words that get us to buy the product and to buy the book. By the way, you do have a book that you gave me a copy of. What's it called?
The book I gave you a copy of is called Wisdom, The Difference Between Good and Great.
Where can we find it?
You can find it on Amazon. Yeah, okay. So I've written two books. One of them is Wisdom.
All in the space of a year. So you were
busy this
hacking
year.
Your way through. They were all this year.
Yeah.
Okay, so Wisdom. And if we haven't said it before, and if you haven't seen it on the title of the podcast, it's Megan Foley, M-E-A-G-H-A-N, Foley, F-O-L-E-Y. Wisdom, what's the subtitle?
The Difference Between Good and Great.
It's on Amazon?
Yeah.
Okay, do you have a website for you?
For me?
Yeah.
Nope, just my company.
And what's, okay. And again, that's
the OpThrive.
OpThrive.com.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm an athlete. I'm just a weekend warrior. I want to get better. Or, not the weekend warrior, because he's past his prime or she's past her prime. I'm a 17-year-old kid. I just want to get to where you got to in New Hampshire. I want to get the scholarship opportunity. What can I do to prime myself? I don't know anything about this flow. Steve Kerr was talking about it last night. He's talking about he wants his players. And at that level, at that elite level of performance, it's no longer about technique and all that stuff. You have that. There are hours and hours, there's 20,000 hours of repetition. It's just a matter of the psychology of getting into that state where you can not even think about what you're doing. You simply do what your body already knows what to do. But at 17, 18, you still have hours and hours to go to get there. But what are some things? It's a $5 version. You can't give us all your secrets. $10 version. What are some things that this 17-year-old girl can do? She's an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to just get a little bit better, to get noticed. This season, she's ready. Senior year, she hasn't been noticed yet. What can she do to put herself into that zone, into that place, that elite level of performance that everybody talks about, but nobody really knows anything about?
Guess most of all, we ain't got nothing to lose.
I would say this, regulate your physiology. So, what we know about when you get under pressure, your heart rate goes up, you know, your chest starts pumping, lungs start breathing faster. Basically, your activation level goes up in your body. And this is correlated with your heart rate. And once you reach a certain point of activation, and then the pressure gets to a certain point, either through your perception or reality, or you've been run around on soccer fields, you hit a certain point of activation, different systems start to shift. So your vision tends to zone in and you can get tunnel vision. Your thinking brain, like your cognitive function, diminishes. Your fine motor skills diminish. Really what's happening in your body in that, say, fight or flight, because that's the response that's kicking in. The priority for your body is to send energy to your extremities and protect your core. So your digestion shuts down. That's what butterflies are. That's what cotton mouth is. It's your digestion shutting down. When you have to use the bathroom right before a big performance, it's your body trying to lighten the load, so to speak. So these physical components, these are the physical components of pressure, of a pressure situation, because that fight or flight has kicked in. The fastest way to regulate that, when you notice that happening, is to breathe your way back to like a lower level of activation. So your brain comes back online, your vision opens up, you can use your body, you know, you're not fumbling around with a soccer ball anymore. So you can notice that, you notice this as a player, when pressure gets too high, one thing that you're probably doing is breathing out of the upper part of your chest, which fuels that fight or flight response. The best thing to do is to breathe into the base of your lungs, so belly breathing. Do that, you want to make sure you're breathing to the base of your lungs and you're breathing to a longer and slower cadence. So four count in, four count out, four count in, four count out, maybe five count in, five count out. If you can slow your breathing down to that level, even for a short period of time, it will significantly bring down your activation level because it will trigger your vagal nerve, so the vagus response, and that will send a signal up to your brain telling you to relax. So then you'll notice you actually can think. You can regulate your emotions. You can process what's happening. You can hear what's going on. You have a lot more access to your cognitive and physical capabilities in that moment. That probably is the fastest way to notice a shift. Because if you're not performing at an elite level, it's probably because you're not performing under pressure.
When do I do that? I do that in the locker room right before I go out to play basketball or football or soccer. Mm-hmm. When do I find time to do that without looking weird? Because nobody else is doing it, Coach Foley.
Oh, you do it as often as you possibly can. So you do it when you're training. You do it when you're running. You do it when you wake up. You do it. The more you can layer this type of breathing into your day and train your body, this is how we regulate, because no one's gonna notice you doing this. It's not like you have to sit on the ground or lay on the ground and be in like zen state. You're just taking some deliberate breaths, ideally through your nose. It's gonna trigger the response faster.
Out through your mouth or back out through your nose?
Back out through your nose if you can. So I challenge you to try this when you're out running. So breathe to a cadence. So maybe you can't get quite to 4 or 5 when you're running, which you can do if you're, you know, keeping a main steady pace. If you're doing sprints, just keep a cadence. 2 in, 2 out, 3 in, 3 out, 2 in, 2 out, 2 in, 2 out, 1 in, 1 out. Keep that cadence. It will keep your heart rate at a constant wave versus being very erratic. It helps keep your coherence levels balanced. So the more you practice it, the more you train your body that's just how you're going to breathe under pressure. Because if you wait until pressure moment hits, you're not going to remember to do this. You have to be practicing it in other ways.
Okay. You know, for the 17-year-old kid out there, this isn't the be-all and end-all. This is a tool to help. You still have to have, and we're going to get to something that you pointed out, and I think you were mentioning when you were losing to me at golf a couple of days ago, which is, so I said we talk about breathing, and, you know, we talk about Eastern cultures, do yoga, and that's more a part of the culture. I don't know, part of the lives, because all the top performers in athletics, at least in our perception of athletics, obviously soccer is a whole lot bigger than people in this country know. But in terms of basketball, football, baseball, hockey, the 4 major sports in this country, those are Western country athletes. And we don't perceive of them being sort of tied to this Eastern philosophy. But what I've seen in the last couple of years is when they do like profiles of them, they're doing this kind of stuff. They're doing this kind of stuff in their own time. So if the Western athletes who are not used to this sort of yoga type breathing and just internalizing regulation as part of their natural cycle, we can see with Eastern folks, not necessarily, we don't even conceive of Eastern athletes, we just think of Eastern folks. Why aren't they performing better?
Why aren't they? I don't know if they're doing it deliberately. I mean, I'm not saying that breathing this way is synonymous with doing yoga. So if you do yoga, good for you. But if you do yoga and then that's it and you leave your day and you don't deliberately weave this in to a performance context, then
that's my point. That's the point where I brought it up, where you still, and this is what I'm going to get at, where you still have to have some basic ability. This is not going to be the thing that puts you over the top if you suck. If you don't have any coordination, breathing is not going to, you can be as calm as you want, you still got to be able to perform.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a base level of athletic skills. You have to have something for this. Now, it's not saying that the weekend warrior can't get a little bit better by doing this. Anybody can. But where I was beginning this conversation was about, in my history and your history, I think, I mean, we're not elite. We didn't make the national team and all that shit. We didn't get to the Olympics. But as a D1 athlete, we were up there.
Top. It's top.
I mean, I was top 15 in the country, but no big deal. But we were up there.
Wow,
we were up
something
there.
Something about tooting your own horn, I think.
I gotta big up myself. I gotta hack through my own life story.
I guess so. All night Sunday Central. Follow me now. Listen. Say hi, Dick. Yes, you're rolling hip hop. Say J Roll. Yes, you're rolling hip hop. Redefinition. Say you're rolling hip hop. Say Black Soul. Come to Rocket Gun. From the first to the last of it, delivery is passionate, the whole and not the half of it, forecasting aftermath of it, projectile and I'm blast away, accurate assassin shit, me a quality close like Bethlehem and Nazareth, after this you be pressing rewind on top your master this, shining like an asterisk for all those in your gathering, connecting like a roundhouse from the townhouse to the tenements, cause all my Brooklyn residents, all the heavy regiments, don't believe here to ever
evidence. We're Brooklyn. See that?
But again, you have to have some basic ability. I bring all that up because, I mean, I listen to you. Mm-hmm. I watch your body language when you speak. And you're very forthright when you say stuff. It's very matter of fact. And I think you wouldn't call me wrong in saying that when it comes to delivering your message, it's black or white. What's the word? Either you get on the what? The pot?
You shit or get off the pot.
You shit or get off the pot. You do or you don't. And Miss Megan, she coaches 8-year-olds. 8-year-old girls or boys?
Girls.
And either they do or they don't.
You make me sound like such a hard ass.
I mean, I don't. I saw some pictures. I don't know. I saw some drawings. I'm not too sure. It was just some random amorphous woman without a face, but you know. You're very black and white in terms of performance, because performance is black and white. Either KD dropped 35 a game over 5 games, or he did not. And there is no trying to salve, or maybe he was good. No. He dropped 35 a game, and that's what caused his team to win. He did that shit. So at the end of the day, touchy-feely breathing is wonderful, but you gotta perform, right? You have to perform.
But again, it's not touchy-feely breathing. It's actually, that's priming you how to perform. So when you talk about me being black and white, some of the things that I'm teaching are the processes that are going to get you there. So I don't look at performance as how many points did you score. And you saw this in my golf game. The process is the outcome. So if you focus in on the process, if you're regulating your physiology, if you're focusing on the process of your skill, so my process of my golf swing, am I doing it exactly the same way every time? Am I setting up my routines? Am I reinforcing those pathways that are going to automate my process so I don't have to think about them deliberately in the game, in the real performance? Am I doing all those things to set myself up for success? That's what's going to carve your skill sets. And it's that deliberate focus and that deliberate practice that is void of, well, should I or shouldn't I? Or maybe they're going to not like me if I do that. Or like, stop the mental negotiations and just do. So when I do that, and when I come across as that black or white, what I'm priming is the process of don't think, just do. And if there's a moment when thoughts are coming in and they're not serving you, you need to get out of that and just do. Thoughts are coming in that are serving you, you're going to leverage that for what you're performing. So it all weaves together. And the breathing, it's really such a big piece of it, because if you don't regulate your physiology, I promise you, no matter how much skill you have, you're going to choke. It's not going to happen because those things are not going to connect. And at the same time, if you're not reinforcing the processes that are going to teach your body how to do the things it needs to do in an energy efficient way in the game, then those will not become automated. So the bad habits are gonna show up. Like when they have this idea that, you know, I'm gonna rise to the occasion, right? You've heard that before. That's not actually what's happening. You fall back to your dominant habits. So if you're practicing these things as you go, if you're reinforcing the proper pathways, i.e. your movement patterns, your skill sets, your breathing, how you regulate your physiology under stress, your thought patterns, like when you allow mental negotiations and when you don't. You do those things, you will be an elite performer.
We gotta buy the book to find out. We gotta go to the website opthrive.com.
Yeah.
Coaches, we have 90 minutes, three times a week, to try to coach a team of 5 to 17-year-old kids, and we're focused on the big picture. What can the team do? What I'm hearing is that the automation of mental pathways, the automation of physiological responses, we are guilty of trying to go through the mechanics of movement. The mechanic, ball control, we turn this, we turn that way, the ball goes over there. But you're saying success lies in giving credence and giving time to the psychological part. Basically, in a training setting, how do you teach Johnny to start to change his brain patterns? Because it has to start with physiology. He has to actually physically do it. Because I think if I'm engaging all my senses in some activity, I remember that more because there's a kinesthetic aspect to it, there's a smell to it, and I see it, I feel it. When I do all those things, I remember. When there is the engagement of the senses, then I think memory and learning takes place a whole lot easier. That's my observation. I don't know if the studies and things prove that. So basically, as a coach, you have to engage all the senses. So it's not just the technique, but the mental part of it. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
And how do you do that?
It's not just you. So it's a little bit of, you know, if I just tell you, you know, pick that up, move that there, kick the ball here, pass that there, and all you're getting is a command and an action. Right? There was no actual brain process. It was just
so like... So how do we add brain process? Because I think this is the failure of a lot of young coaches.
It is, because they tell. So, you know, I actually got a lot of heat from the parents, or a handful of the parents from this last season, because they had said, I believe was the collective message, I'm not sure what they all said, was that you don't yell at our kids during the game. Like, you don't command them during the games. You don't give them enough guidance. And the reason that I don't do that, and we had talked about this when we were golfing, is so when they're in the game, they're already highly activated because they're excited because it's a game. They're running around the soccer field, so they're exhausted. So their activation level is elevated to a point where their brain is starting to close down in terms of their capabilities of thinking through the game. Well, soccer is a very thinking game. You have to, there's no play-by-play, right? It's, you have to figure it out as you go. And if I'm screaming at you, when you're already to that point where you're about to shut your brain down, and then I scream at you, you're gonna go into fear brain, and you're totally gonna stop thinking. And all you're gonna be able to do, you might do the right thing, but it's purely because I told you to do it. You didn't learn to say, oh, the ball's coming this way, the player's running this way, I'm gonna intercept here, I'm gonna pass there, and then move here. You didn't do any of that. You didn't learn anything. You didn't become an intelligent player. You just did out of fear, and having just totally reactive, what you just, oh, jump, oh, how high? You just did what you heard to do. So that player didn't learn. And so if I'm patient and I sit back and I understand they're in a high activation level and I can gauge my players by understanding, okay, that one looks like she's like a deer in headlights right now, so she maybe needs a break. This one over here looks like she's handling herself, so she could probably handle some more instruction. You know, if someone's at a highly activated level, I'll have to pull them out of the game to actually tell them, talk them through what they need to think about. And then they test it out when they're in there. So I get to see what they actually learned in practice during the game. So it's not to say I say nothing, but I'm not going to scream at somebody and send them over the edge to, yes, they might do the right thing, but they didn't learn anything. So it's about being very aware of that as coaches. Yes, you have the right information, but your job isn't just to give them the information, it's to let them learn it. So if somebody is actually, I do a lot of questioning my players. So I'll give them instruction and then I'll quiz them back. What are you gonna do here? Freeze. you have the ball, you made that wrong play, you know, you passed it there, where should you pass it? Everybody's exactly where they should be. What would be a better thing for you to do? Oh, I should go left instead of going right. Huh, why should you do that? Oh, because then I can do a give and go, and then I have an open shot. Okay, why would you go the other way? I don't know. What happens if you go the other way? Well, I have a really bad shot. Oh, okay, so what are you going to do now? I'm going to do this.
Genesis.
Come on.
The official, nigga.
The other thing I do is I emphasize breathing a lot. Great example, player gets knocked down, something hurts. They come crying to me. They're eight, it happens a lot. I'm injured in some way. I will not even talk to them until they breathe. So I'll teach them, so I'll actually, as they're trying to like fumble their way through saying what's wrong, I'll just start breathing deeply and guiding them with my nonverbals, like breathing in, breathing out, and they will start breathing with me until they can actually collect themselves. So they're learning, and I tell them, if you breathe like this, the pain will go away because it will diminish. It will open your ability to control your pain. So I bring their activation down, or they bring their activation down, and then when they can actually talk, they explain what's happening. So little things like that I have them do. So it's about weaving these concepts in and about choosing as a coach, what are those beliefs? Because you can't get through everything you want to instill in a player in, like you said, a couple hour practices a week or something. You have to be very deliberate. What are the messages that I want them to learn? For me, what I do is I try and disrupt them when I can. So I really have them focus on your own game. Because the referee is going to make you mad. Someone on your team is going to make you mad. Someone on the other team is going to make you mad. Someone's going to make a bad call, a bad play, or whatever. So if in practice there's an opportunity, someone scores a goal, it's a very clean goal, a very obvious goal, I might say, no goal. And if they freak out, they have to work through it. Someone gets knocked down. I actually teach them, I have them do what I call down-ups, because they're girls, I want them to be tough. I don't want them to like cry or whatever. I want them to learn when they
You're
fall.
Mean. You are
no,
mean.
I want them to learn girl. When they fall, they need to pop up and keep playing. If the ref decides, you know, the foul, the ref will decide that.
So what's a down-up?
I say, down-up. And you have to fall down and pop up as fast as you can. So you do this during warm-up. So they're dribbling around, maybe I'll call out, you know, step over, and they have to do a step over and dribble around. I might say, sometimes I say go, and they have to sprint outside the box. So I'll have them do different, you know, quarter moves or whatever. And then I'll call in down up.
Basically a push-up.
Get down. No, you don't fall forward, you fall down, back. You fall back, like on your butt. Down up, and then you stand up, like somebody knocked you down. Down up, down up.
Priming the neural pathways to simply get back up in the game.
Yep, so they're used to, you fall down, you pop right back up. And they know this now, and they're eight. Down up. They say it to each other. Down up, down up. Someone falls down. So those subtle things, I didn't have a big long lecture about why you want to get back up and what that means and how to be tough. No, just teaching them
action.
A little tool, an action-based thing that is priming their body and their brain to just act, just be, get back in the game. You know, different ways that I can throw them off and teach them, okay, expect that. Expect that something's going to try and throw you off your game, but it's not going to throw me off because I'm used to playing my game. So those
subtle,
are some examples.
Subtle. Criminal.
The Miyagi effect. Teaching them how to wash windows, but I'm really teaching them how to...
Megasan. Banzai.
Yeah.
Banzai Foley.
Yeah.
Banzai, not Axel, Banzai Foley. Okay, so we've come a long way with that.
Yeah.
With Megan Follier. MEAGHANFOLEY at opthrive.com. The name of the book is Wisdom. What's the subtitle?
The difference between good and great.
The difference between good and great. And what is that difference?
The other one, willpower. What a load of crap. That's the other book.
We'll talk about that next time. But let's stick with the wisdom, not the crap. What's the difference between good and great?
Wisdom.
Well, it's not far down to paradise. At least it's not foamy. If the wind is right, you can sail away. Find tranquility. Oh, the canvas can do miracles. Just you wait and see. Never bad reason to pretend. And if the wind is right, you can find the joy of innocence again. Oh, the candles can do miracles. Just you wait and see. Believe me.
Well, really the book is about the concept of wisdom, that it's not something that you achieve after a long life. It's not synonymous with an old age. It's not something that comes over time. It comes easier over time if you do it, but it's about seizing micro moments, micro efforts. So every opportunity that you can choose to be present, that you can choose to be, again, deliberate with how you're viewing, how you're doing, how you're being, is an opportunity. It's grooving the pathway of wisdom so that you have more perceptual agility.
Which is what? What is perceptual agility?
The ability to choose deliberately a perception that will serve you in any given moment.
I fell down a well, stuck there. Mm-hmm. It's just me at night. How does perceptual ability aid me?
Well, if you were to think, I'm stuck down a well at night, no one's around, no one's gonna find me, I'm gonna die, I'm not gonna live through this, this is really scary, this is really dark, what's happening to your physiology? If you were to know.
I would not know.
It's probably elevating your stress. Your stress response is starting, you're probably gonna launch yourself into panic. What that's doing, not only in making it feel not so good, it's burning up energy. It's coursing your body with cortisol, which is not serving you in the moment. So you're going to burn yourself out and you're going to flood your system in an unnecessary way. So if you did actually need energy, you'd run out. So you'd actually have a backlash. As opposed to thinking, yep, this sucks. I'm in trouble here. I got to figure out maybe how I can get out of here. What resources do I have around me? Do I have my cell phone? Can somebody hear me in earshot? Can I climb up the inside of the well somehow? Can I build a rope out of the grass down here? I don't know. Can I do something? That's going to be way more effective for you in the moment. And if I can't, maybe I need to just rest so I can listen and hear if there's people out there. So it's serving you way better to regulate and minimize your energy output in that moment by not freaking out. So choosing the perception is going to serve you the best. It's not about saying, it'll be fine, someone will find me. It's about being effective with how you perceive that situation.
Sometimes I feel the fear of uncertainty stinging clear. And I can't help but ask myself how much I let the fear take the wheel and steer.
So if I decide to waver my chance to be one of the hive, will I choose water over wine and hold my own and drive?
Good or bad, we're going to end by going back to the beginning, the home. Mom and Dad still alive?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you want to tell them right now?
My parents?
Yeah.
That I am grateful for. I know we've had a challenging time at times, and I think it's made us all so much closer. I think that it has given me a lot of, a lot of why I am who I am now. And, they, no matter what, were always so giving and supportive and have as wild as some of my ideas and comments, and even as crazy as or criminal as I was as a child. I'm thankful that they let me be me, and they always encourage that, and that's, there's not really a whole lot else you could ask for outside of that.
So. What do you tell the 14-year-old Megan Foley out there right now? She has no idea what's coming. What's coming if she listens to you?
Well, you just keep doing what you're doing, and...
So you're advocating criminal behavior?
No, I'm advocating you... you do the best you can with what you have. That's what everyone does in any given moment. And, my 14-year-old me had a really effective survival strategy. So use that. And no, you may not keep that strategy forever, but right now, it's working for you. So...
Megan Foley, thank you very much for spending a couple of minutes with us on Ubuntu Radio and sharing your truth. We're truly, truly happy. We're glad that you're able to buy some cervezas. You had to because you lost the golf.
Yeah.
You lost the golf match. But
yeah,
thank you very much for living up to being a woman about living up to what you had to do. But it was. I hope you got to say some of the things that you really wanted to express about who you are, what you've done, and the things you'd like others to feel and hear. Because again, the key takeaway that I'm getting is not what you get. It never is. Because the getting may or may not happen, but it's the process of the getting. Mm-hmm. And if you focus on the process, the ancillary benefits are that the feeling ain't gonna go nowhere but inside of you. Yeah. And it's gonna strengthen you. It's gonna embolden you. And then it's a matter of packaging that feeling, owning it, owning the process, simply replicating it in other aspects of your life. From 14, 15, 17, Connecticut, New Hampshire, you've been to Arizona, you've been to St. Croix, but we'll talk about that on another episode of Ubuntu Radio. So when you see Megan Foley again, listen to her. And we thank you, and we hope that you can come back.
Thank you.
And maybe next time you will talk about winning some golf, but I don't think
when
that's going to happen.
When you're buying my beers.
Ubuntu Radio is out!
Spotlight on.